Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken, so to speak.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Florida Alternative Medicine and Old School Labs. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding and talk about the history of bodybuilding. My name is John Hansen, and on today's show, we have a very special guest, three-time Mr. Olympia Frank Zane, one of the true icons of the sport. He has agreed to be interviewed by the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, so we're really, really excited. Frank is obviously one of the greatest bodybuilders who ever lived, and when we talk about the golden age, he was one of the top bodybuilders of that time. I believe he won three Mr. Universe wins, two in NABBA and one at the IFBB. He won the IFBB Mr. America. And then, of course, he won three Mr. Olympia titles from 1977 through 1979. And I was actually lucky to be there in Columbus, Ohio, to see all of his wins. So Frank really set the standard for developing a aesthetic and symmetrical physique. And he just did his own thing. He didn't follow the mass monsters, as we talk about in our interview today. And we are going to talk to Frank about his career. Basically, we're going to talk about how he started bodybuilding. And we go over all the major contests that he competed in. He started competing in 1959, when I believe he was about 17 years old. And competed all the way up until he was 41 in 1983, which was his last Mr. Olympia contest. So we're very honored to talk to the great Frank Zane. So you guys are really going to love this interview. I know a lot of you are big Frank Zane fans out there, and you've probably been waiting for this interview for a long time. All right, before we get to that, I want to mention that we are sponsored by Old School Labs, and I've been with Old School Labs for several years now. This is the supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements for the discerning athlete. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with. It's the brand I used to win the Natural Mr. Universe in 2012. You may have heard of their award-winning Fat Burner Vintage Burn, which is the world's first muscle-preserving fat burner, or Vintage Blast, which is their two-stage pre-workout, or Vintage Brawn, which is the triple protein isolate powerhouse. It's packed with eggs, milk, and beef protein. Their products have no proprietary blends, no artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners. Old School Labs is also the home of 1983 Mr. Olympia Samir Banute and bodybuilding legend Tom Platz. So use the discount code LEGENDS12 and you will get 12% off your order when you go to their website at oldschoollabs.com. Old School Labs, supplements that make sense. All right. So what else is going on in your world, guys? I am still promoting my seminar, which is coming up. And that will be, again, taking place on March 21st and 22nd out here in Tampa, Florida. It'll be a two-day seminar, and it's going to cover everything as far as training and nutrition. And it will also feature time where we will go into the gym and train one-on-one with every member of the seminar. And I will show everybody how to do all the most important exercises there are. And then when we do the classroom setting earlier in the day, we're going to go over different exercise routines and the way to structure a workout routine, the best way to train to build muscle, just everything. Nutrition, how to structure your diet, how to lose fat without losing muscle. We're going to go over a variety of subjects. In fact, if you go to johnhansenfitness.com and you click on the seminar link, you'll see that we have the full schedule for both days, for Saturday and Sunday. And again, that's going to be March 21st and 22nd in Tampa, Florida. So it's about 6 weeks away, and we've got a few people going already. So thank you to all of you who have signed up. We have to limit it to 15 people because we have to do the one-on-one instruction with the training. So if you're thinking about coming out, and I hope you do, sign up as soon as you can. Go to johnhansenfitness.com, and you can pay right there online and reserve your spot for March 21st and 22nd. All right. I also put up another video up on YouTube. I'm trying to get my YouTube page going. So I put up a video for my shoulder workout. I think I've talked about this before. I follow a cycle training where I do cycles for power and build up my strength. And then I'll do that for 6 weeks. And then I switch gears and I do the same exercise routine, but now I'm doing it more for mass, for hypertrophy. So the reps are increased about 6 to 12 reps. But I'm using heavier weights in all the basic movements based on my power cycle that I did the previous 6 weeks. So I call it the MP6 workout, and I sell a book on it. It's on Amazon, and I also have it available on my website, johnhansonfitness.com, along with all my other books and DVDs. So I am trying to get some videos up on YouTube. Like I said, I just got my shoulder workout up there, and then this coming week, I'll probably have my back workout up there. And I'm going to film them every week. I'm going to film a new video every week. So try and get my YouTube channel going and spread the word about bodybuilding training for over 50. That's what I'm calling it, over 50 muscle. And then my interviews with RX Muscle, where we talked about Frank Zane versus Franco Colombo, that has not been up yet. So Dave Palomo told me it will definitely be this week. So if you follow RX Muscle on YouTube, look for that this week. And I think I've got another interview also coming up on desktop bodybuilding, which is with Xavier, and that is out of Australia. I think he's going to have one coming up this week. And I did another podcast with Scott McNally for Advices Radio. So if you listen to the podcast, or I think Scott is also on YouTube, you can check him out on YouTube. Check that out, Advices Radio. And he calls it that because of what Arnold said to Franco, where he's going to give him bad advices. Check that out on YouTube. And we did an interview about training for the natural bodybuilder. So some of you may find that interesting. Okay, our podcast last week where we did it with Roger Schwab, where Roger talked about training with Mike Mentzer, and he also talked about the beginning of women's bodybuilding. It did get quite a few emails. So if you guys are interested in emailing me about any of our shows, including today's show with Frank Zane, you can email me at naturalolympia@gmail.com. And if you're listening to the show on Apple iTunes, please go on there and rate the show, because that helps us. And you could also leave a review there. But I did get an email this week from Mark Martinez. And Mark, of course, has been on the show before. He said, "Hey, John, great podcast. Roger's memories took me back to that summer in 1977 when I joined Gold's Gym in Santa Monica. And that memory that is attached to so much unbridled emotion really came rushing back to me. Roger's memories of Mike Mentzer and his training remind me of a day at Gold's that I believe I relayed to you in my interview. Mike had seen me use the Nautilus pullover machine, and he was waiting to use it. He loaded it up with 50-pound plates and explained to me the range of motion and the rep cadence and the importance of concentration. He straps into the machine, and he reaches back for the handles. He proceeds to do the reps in a slow, controlled manner, amazingly slow compared to the training style of the time. What I remember as well is that he was totally silent. Sweat poured from him and his eyes were shut tight. He was winded after the set and sweat soaked, and he said that one set was all he needed. The importance of the mind link was forever forged in my mind. Great podcast. Keep up the great work, Mark Martinez." All right. Thank you, Mark. And I got an email from Vikram Rao, and he told me that Francis Benfato wants to be on the show. I guess Vikram contacted Francis, and he said, "On a recent Bodybuilding Legends podcast hosted by John Hansen, Jerry Branham said Francis once told him about something he learned about that would help people retain muscle as they aged. Jerry said he never found out what that was, but both John, Jerry, and others are very curious. I'm wondering if perhaps Francis might be interested in an interview with John Hansen." And Adele Benfato, who was probably related, maybe his wife, she wrote back and she said, "Yes, for sure. Francis would love to talk about his training methodology called the PPM. So they gave us an email address, and I emailed Francis back, and I'm waiting to hear from him. So hopefully we will hear back from Francis Benfato. We'd love to have him on the show. I got an email from Max Reed from Germany, and he said, "Dear Mr. Hansen, I've ordered all your books a while ago from the States, and I was delighted when they arrived. With great interest, I've read all the books, and I enjoyed them very much. I have trained in the old school volume style for several years, but I was quite weak. The power cycles in your MP6 training helped me out a lot, but I seem to respond better to volume all in all. I have a question regarding the optimal cycle duration. Do you always do a 6-week power cycle followed by a mass cycle, or are you recommending doing several power cycles after each other? Kindest regards, Max." Yes, that's the way I always do it, Max. I do a 6-week power cycle followed by a 6-week mass cycle. I found that if the power cycle goes too long, I kind of get burnt out on it. My strength doesn't go up. I feel like I'm not getting stronger because I kind of feel it more in my joints and stuff. So 6 weeks seems to be the optimum length for that. In fact, what I have been doing recently, and I may even write another MP6 workout book, maybe like an additional book or an updated book, is what I've been doing is I'll do 3 weeks of the power cycle. And then on the fourth week, I kind of break it up and I do a superset week. So I'll superset chest and back. I'll superset my exercises for shoulders and my exercises for legs. And then I'll superset biceps and triceps. And I'll do that over four workouts. And I'll use about 75% of the weight that I normally use for my power cycle. So it's like moderate weight. And that seems to give my body a break. And then when I go back, I'll do another 3 weeks of the power cycle, picking up from where I left off. And then after the power cycle's over, after I've done 6 weeks total, I'll do a light week. And that's what we call a deload week, where I'll only use 50% of my normal weight, which is really light. Just kind of gives my body and my mind a break. And then when I come back from that, I'll do another cycle, which will be the mass cycle. So I'll use the same exercises that I use with the power cycle, but now I'm doing like 6 to 12 reps compared to when I was using the power cycle, where I was probably using an average of like 3 to 6 reps for most of the exercises. So now that I've gotten stronger, I'm using the hypertrophy reps, which is anywhere from 6 to 12, 6 to 15 reps, and I'm doing that with the mass cycle. And then, like I said, I follow the same workout because I have to base it on those poundages. So that's the way I've been doing it lately. So I think the addition of that superset week kind of helps break up the power cycle and makes me feel stronger and more rested when I come back to the power cycle. But thank you for your email. And I got another email from Gareth Hudson. And Gareth said, "Hey, John, I love the show. Are the audio podcast and the videos on your website the same, or are they different interviews? Kind regards, Gareth Hudson." No, those are different interviews. The video interviews that are on my website, which is bodybuildinglegendsshow.com, I started with those. So I started, I think back in 2014, I interviewed Chris Cormier and Bill Grant and Mike Katz. I think those were my first three interviews. And we did it on Skype, or Chris at the time was living in Tampa, so I did that one in person. So after that, about, I think for now the last 2.5 years, we've been doing the podcast, so we've been doing those every week. So I don't have as many video interviews, obviously, as I do the audio interviews with the podcast. But yeah, most of those are different. So if you haven't listened to those or watched those, then yeah, go back on the video page on my website, which is bodybuildinglegendsshow.com, and check those out. And I got a couple comments also on my Facebook page. Gary Bartlett, who we had on the show before, great photographer from Canada, has been around a long time. Gary really liked the show with Roger Schwab. He said, "Congratulations to John Hansen for a great interview with the legendary IFBB judge and bodybuilding author Roger Schwab on this past week's Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Roger is one of the most knowledgeable guys I know regarding the golden days of bodybuilding. His insight and recollections from that era makes for a very entertaining listen, especially for fans of the old days. On this episode, he reflects back to a time when he was friends and trained with Mike Mentzer. I was a huge fan of Mike, and I really enjoyed his take on this former legend. As always, John's expertise in interviewing his guests allows us to go back to a time that would be forgotten if not for his excellent interviews." And Paul C. Culitin commented on that, and he said, "Mentzer impressed the hell out of me then. He still does." And Albert Busek, who I've been trying to get on the show, but Albert has not answered my emails, he said, "Thank you very much, Gary." So hopefully Albert will come on the show one time, because I know he's got a ton of stories to tell. On my John Hansen Fitness page on Facebook, I also got a comment from John Torelli, who was talking about the Mike Mentzer interview with Roger Schwab. And he said, "Very interesting and informative interview, John. So the way Roger Schwab described Mike Mentzer's workouts, it's obvious he did the same workouts that Casey Viator did in the Colorado experiment, 3 whole body workouts a week. Starting with legs, that leg press, leg extension, and squat combo. If you research the Colorado experiment, you'll see that. When Sergio trained with Arthur Jones, he tried to follow Casey through that workout. And when they did that leg combination, I was told Sergio collapsed under the squat bar, and that's where the weight was reduced. He was only able to use 135 pounds. Casey, on the other hand, used over 700 pounds on the leg press for about 30 reps, leg extensions the whole stack for about 20 reps, straight over to 500-pound squats for a high set of reps. I've done this leg workout. If you take all 3 exercises to real failure, it's extremely difficult to perform more than 1 round. These interviews are the best. Thank you so much. I really appreciate them." And Gary Bartlett also made a comment on that. He said, "It was a fantastic listen, and I highly recommend it. The sad part is that Casey passed away at a young age. I saw him compete at the 82 Olympia, and he was awesome. His muscles looked like they were forged from iron." All right, So I believe that is it for our emails. So before we get to our interview with Frank Zane, which I know you guys are anxiously waiting for, I also want to mention that we are brought to you by our other sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. Their certified and knowledgeable staff will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number, which is 813-922-8939, or you can reach them at their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. Again, flalternativemeds.com. Ask them for a free consultation, and also you will get 20% off your order because you heard the ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. All right, without further ado, here is our interview with three-time Mr. Olympia, Frank Zane, where we talk about his bodybuilding career. Here we go. All right, welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and we have a very special guest with us this week, one of the true legends of the sport, Frank Zane, three-time Mr. Olympia, a true icon in the sport. And Frank, we're very, very happy to have you here.
Well, thank you.
All right, Frank. Well, I was just mentioning, I bought your latest book, Zane Bodybuilding Manual. I think it's a fantastic book. I recommend it to everybody out there who's a bodybuilding fan. And one of the things I really love about it is you go in detail about your career, when you started working out when you were 14 years old, and go through every contest. And being a bodybuilding fan as I am, I really, really appreciated that. And I loved reading all those details of every contest you went in.
Well, it's basically everything I know about bodybuilding. I wanted to put it all in one book. Mm-hmm. It's quite lengthy, and so that's the end result.
Well, Frank, let's go back to the beginning when you started. You were born in Pennsylvania, and you started working out, I think, in 1957 when you were 14 years old. And you and your brother were kind of getting picked on, right, when you were coming home from school, and so that's how you got into bodybuilding originally.
Well, he was, so it was my job to defend him, and so basically I was looking for a way to build myself up. Self-defense, and I discovered bodybuilding, and I started working out with dumbbells in my basement, and in 2 weeks, I had lats. So I really liked it, and one thing led to another. Over a few years later, I discovered there was such a thing as bodybuilding contests, and I went my first one in Mayes, Pennsylvania. It was near Allentown. And I was pumping up backstage. There was like open novice contest. There's 50 guys in it, and I was pumping up backstage. And Bob Hoffman, the father of American weightlifting, came over to me and he said that if he had a physique like mine, he'd walk around with his shirt off all the time.
Right.
That's all I needed to hear. You know, at that impressionable age, when you get feedback like that, it really motivates you. And that's the way it was with me. And so I started training seriously, and one thing led to another. I think a year later, I competed in Teenage Mr. America when I was 18, and I won my first trophy. And so that was the start of it. And then after a while, it was all AAU in those days. I wasn't really satisfied with those contests. It was, you know, you had to be a weightlifter to get anywhere, and I wasn't. And so I discovered IFBB. They had contests in the Northeastern, then like tri-state area, New York, New Jersey, and it was Massachusetts and also Pennsylvania, although I was the only one from there. And so I started entering there. I just continued with it and rose up the ranks in 1968, won Mr. America. And then a week later, I won Mr. Universe and beat Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
And then moved to California, and, you know, my career took off after that.
Right.
That was 1969.
One of your early influences, too, Frank, was Steve Reeves, right? Didn't you see the movie Hercules like a lot of other bodybuilders did?
Yeah, I always admired his physique. We used to have had a television show in Los Angeles in the late 90s, and Steve came on. He was really a great guy.
Wow.
Gave me a lot of good tips.
Yeah.
Actually, I wrote a song about him, and I did for him, and he was really pleased. So he admired the way he looked and wanted to have my look after that. So that's how it got started.
Yeah, I've done a lot of interviews with bodybuilders from your era, and I'm amazed at how many people were influenced by that movie, Hercules, and by Steve Reeves' physique.
1960, I remember. I was a senior in high school. I saw that, and I was really, really motivated after that.
Now, Frank, you always had in mind this idea of developing a symmetrical physique, and you weren't going after or chasing after the mass like so many other bodybuilders did. Did that come from admiring Steve Reeves and looking at his physique and seeing how symmetrical and perfect his body looked?
Yeah, you know, to be quite honest, it was the way it all turned out. I really didn't plan anything special. I mm-hmm. just worked out, you know, and I did all the stuff that I read about in magazines, and that's it all came about. I worked out. I worked everything. I worked my legs a lot, and so, you know, as a result of all that, my body developed over the years. And then when I moved to California in 1969, training at Gold's Gym, training with Arnold and Dave Draper, Joe Weider was out here, moved out here at that time. I really learned a lot how to train and what to do, how to pose. And I kept at it. I competed for 23 years from 1969 up to 1983. And that was my last contest in 1983, Mr. Olympia in Munich. And in the process, I managed to win Mr. Olympia three times. Three times, Mr. America, Mr. World. So it was quite an adventure.
Yeah, for sure. One thing I was surprised when I read the book, and I think I knew this from before, but I'm from Chicago and I live out in Tampa, Florida now. And you lived out in Tampa for a while and you were training with Jim Haislop. And that's also where you met your wife, right, Christine?
Yeah, I met Haislop in 1965. He was in the Navy. And he encouraged me to come to Florida, and so I did, and I was teaching school in New Jersey at the time. So after I got done there, I quit the job and got a job teaching in St. Petersburg, and it was there that I met my wife.
Yeah.
And we hit it off right away, and we've been married 52 years now.
Wow, and, congratulations. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So how did you like Florida? I read in the book you were getting tired of the winters in Pennsylvania, and you grew up there, so you were always kind of dreaming about California, right? You had maps of California in your car and everything. But before you went there, you went to Florida for a couple of years.
Yeah, I wasn't ready to make the trip across the country like that to California. That was my goal. Mm-hmm. And, Florida was the next stopping place, and it was better than Pennsylvania. And so, you know, I spent three good years there, and then I got the opportunity to go to California in 69. And so I took it, and I've been here ever since.
Let's talk about some of those early IFBB contests, because we just did a show not too long ago about the 1965 Mr. Olympia, and they also beat the Universe and the Mr. World with the Mr. Olympia because they only had a couple competitors in the Olympia. And in 1965, the very first time they had that Mr. Olympia, you were in the Mr. Universe, and you won your weight class along with Earl Menard and Rick Wayne. And so you were right there when it all started in 1965 with the Mr. Olympia, right?
Pretty much. I was teaching school in New Jersey at the time, and I had a proportioned good physique, but I lacked a lot of definition, but I had the shape, mm-hmm. and it was a good start. And after that, the next year, 66, I came in and I was in really good shape the next year. And I think that year, Chet Yorton won it that year.
You won your class, and Chet Yorton won the overall.
And then 67, I went in again. And I was even in better shape, and Don Howarth won it that year.
Right.
And so I resolved to win it in 68, and I did. Mm-hmm. And then I wanted to save Mr. Universe for the next year, so I had something to train for. But it was the next week in Miami, and they talked me into going because I was living in Florida. So I went in it, and I won it in 68, and that was the start of it.
Yeah.
And after that, I got Weider gave me an offer to come to California, so I went and got settled in. Training at Gold's Gym in 69. It was really great. I loved the lifestyle.
Yeah.
Couldn't really make a living in those days just doing bodybuilding. And so I was a math teacher, and I got a job teaching math in Venice, California. And so I stuck with that until 1977 and took sabbatical leave, and then I won Mr. Olympia, and then I never went back.
Right. During those years, Frank, from like 65 when you did that first IFBB Universe show, and then all the way up until you went over to California, every year your physique improved. What was the result of getting better? Was it just the consistency with the training? Were you learning more about diet? Did you learn that you had to get, obviously harder and more ripped in order to do better?
Well, it's just a natural evolution. I learned more, and I did more, and I kept training. That's the thing, is I kept training. The thing is, I was teaching school full time. Up until 1977. And in 1977, I took sabbatical, and that left the autumn open for me And then, so I was able to concentrate full time on my training. And so I did, and I won the Olympia the first time in 77. 78, won it again, even in better shape. In 79, I was in my greatest shape, I think.
Right.
The last month, I had a house in Palm Springs. We're living in Santa Monica. I had a house in Palm Springs. The last month, I just stayed over there, praying full time. And it was just miraculous what happened by doing that.
Yeah, I just was reading about part of the book today. That was really, really cool. Frank, I want to take you back to 68 when you beat Arnold. Now, did you know about Arnold at the time? Because he was kind of a big star in Europe. He won the Mr. Universe at 20 years old. Did you know he was going to be in that universe in Miami when you won?
I did. But, you know, Jim Haislip had competed against him for NABBA Universe in London a week before. And he says, don't worry about him. He says, he's big, he's white, and he's smooth. And so, you know, I wasn't really concerned about Arnold. I was concerned about Ricky Wayne. Ricky, I mean, I knew Ricky. He was in great shape. I was thinking, oh, God, this guy's great. I don't know about that. But he didn't show up. So, you know, there was Arnold and there was me. Arnold was, you know, the white whale. And I remember after that, you know, he was Joe Weider's boy.
Right.
I said to Joe after the contest, he's talking all about Arnold and he's saying, oh, I'm going to bring them to California, build them up and make them into the champion. I said, hey, Joe, what about me? I just beat him for Mr. Universe. What are you going to do for me? And, you know, that was the whole thing. He was just so in love with Arnold, he didn't want to do anything. He just wanted to have Arnold as a feather in his cap. And so he brought him to California. And I remember the first article that came out, and it said, by Arnold, said, I lost Mr. Universe to a chicken with 17-inch arms.
No way.
And that infuriated me.
Really?
Yeah. But, you know, when I moved to Canada, it worked out really good. You know, we trained together for 4 or 5 years, and it was all good.
Did you meet him in Miami, or did you not meet him really until you went to California a year later?
I met him in Miami. He didn't speak much English. But, you know, and when I got to California, I slept on a cot in his living room. He had an apartment in Santa Monica near the beach. I slept there. And I was still teaching school in Florida at the time. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I worked out. I was there for 2 weeks. I worked out and just loved it. And so I went back and resigned and then just drove back out to California.
Yeah.
And that was the start of it.
That had to be a magical time in bodybuilding, right? Back in the late 60s, early 70s out in California.
Yeah, it was just getting started. It was just getting started. So it was a good time to be here. But I really loved Gold's Gym at the time. It had only been built 4 years before, and I loved training there. It was, you know, it was just solid concrete floors, a lot of good mirrors, and it was just great equipment that Joe Gold made. And it was fantastic. But now I was teaching full time. I was a mathematics teacher, teaching full time, and then going to graduate school. And so I had a busy schedule, but I still managed to work out and get in shape, especially in the summers because I had the summers off. So in 1969, I competed in Mr. World and won that. And then in 1970, I went to NABBA Universe and won Amateur Universe. Arnold won Pro Universe, and my wife won Miss Universe Bikini.
Yeah, your wife was competing in quite a few shows back then, right?
Not a lot of shows. Basically, she won Miss Americana in 1967 when I was competing for the Olympia, but you know, I didn't win it. Mm-hmm. It wasn't Mr. America. She won it. She was really good.
Yeah, I remember that one in 1970 when you went over to NABBA for the first time, and you were in outstanding shape in that one. That was probably, up until that time, that was probably your best condition to date, right?
It was.
Yeah.
And all three of us won. Arnold won Pro, I won.
Yeah.
Miss Universe.
Yeah, I remember that picture with the three of you.
I spent the summer training in South Africa all summer.
Oh, really? Wow.
I got in great shape. And then I competed, but the problem was Bill Pearl was in that contest.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Bill was a legend in London. And they're so enamored with Bill that they didn't even compare us. So I won my class, he won his class, and they just gave it to him. I was thinking, what's going on here? Isn't this what they're supposed to do?
Yeah.
And so, you know, when you lose, basically you still have that motivation. So I was really motivated. The following year, in 72, I came back and won it easily.
Mm-hmm.
I was bigger and had it all going on, and they liked.
Yeah, you told a funny story about when Bill was being judged, and the judge told him to turn one way, and he just stayed there.
Yeah, yeah. taught me a lesson that yeah. You know, when you're the favorite, you can get away with stuff like that.
Right.
I saw Arnold do the same thing in the 80 Olympia.
Right, right.
He wasn't doing the compulsory poses. And the head judge said, Arnold, he says, look, do the compulsory poses or we're going to disqualify you. And Arnold just kept doing what he wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And the guy's name was Dennis Stallard, I remember, from Wales. Says to him, mm-hmm. he says, Arnold, you're disqualified. Get off the stage.
Really?
So he did get off the stage. And that night, Stallard was fired and they sent him back to England.
Wow, no kidding. I didn't know that.
See,
wow,
so that's the lesson there. When you're a favorite like that and you're in cahoots with the organizers, you pretty much do whatever you want. That's what Bill Pearl did in you know, the 71 universe. They told him, you know, to show his other side and he wouldn't do it.
I said, right.
Whoa, you can get away with anything when you're a favorite.
Right, right.
They saw it with Pearl and they saw it with Arnold.
Yeah. And so what you're saying is when you went up against Bill Pearl, you were in the short class, and this is the pro division, you were in the short class, You won that, and then he won the tall class, and they're supposed to compare the short class and the tall class for the overall, and they didn't even compare you guys. They just automatically gave
Never
it to Bill
did,
Pearl.
No.
Yeah, wow.
And there was, Sergio was in that class with Bill, and so was Dave Draper, and Rich Park. Mm-hmm. They didn't even look at those guys at all, just with Bill.
Wow.
He had a dark tandem, you know. He posed good, but, you know, he had a lot of flaws. No cuts in his thighs. Smooth, big back, smooth. He had abs. That was about it. And he posed very well, you know, but he just showed one side of his body. I mean, I analyzed everything he did. You know, I learned a lot from Bill. And I don't like to be disparaging against Bill because, you know, he's a great bodybuilder. But I analyzed everything about a person when I looked at them.
If they would have compared you, Frank, do you think you would have beat him? I mean, if it was judged fairly.
Probably not in London.
No? Okay.
No.
Do you think Bill should have beat Sergio Oliva? Because I heard some controversy about that over the years. Some just back and forth between some people thought Sergio should have beat Bill at that 71 universe.
If you're just looking at the body, I'd say yes. But, you know, there's more to it than that.
Yeah.
Bill
yeah.
had, like, the total package. You know,
right.
He knew how to pose what he had. And he was good at it. And he was a favorite.
Well, one thing about you, Frank, you learn a lot from the competitors you competed against. I remember even reading that you said you learned a lot from Larry Scott when he won that 65 Olympia, just because of the charisma he had and the, you know, the audience reaction he got because the crowd went absolutely crazy for him that night.
Well, he was great. You know, I was sitting there in the front row looking at him, and I went backstage because I was in the contest too, not in the same Olympia. That was the first Olympia.
Right.
I think I was in the universe. I went backstage and seen him up close. He was amazing. And all this fine detail that you didn't see from far away. And all these lines in his just I was knocked out by the way he looked. And I talked to him, you know, he was real nice. And he said, you know, I should move to California. And that was sort of on my list anyway. So he was a great guy. I really liked Larry.
So what was it like training with Arnold when you were in California and you went there in 69 and you were training with him in 70? You guys were training partners quite a few years, right?
Yeah. It was very methodical. He'd always show up on time. And he worked out really hard. You know, he was very focused.
Yeah.
Very focused. Of course, I was too. And so, you know, he was a great training partner.
And you guys squatted really heavy too. You were a really good squatter. That's why probably why you had such great legs. Yeah.
I remember we were squatting one day and we worked up to 405 and he did 8 reps and I did 10.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And then I got a lower back injury right after that. So that was what happened.
Right.
That was 72. I remember, and that was bulky when that happened. And it was 5 weeks before the NABBA universe, and it was, I thought, well, my year to win it. And I trimmed down. I lost about 10 pounds. I got in really good shape. But, you know, it was close. I had a lower back injury, and I had to train around it.
Okay. And one of the things you also did, Frank, that I read in your book, was your wife, Christine, would take pictures of you all the time, and you would analyze the pictures, and you said, this is something that very few other bodybuilders do, right? You were one of the few people that really knew what you looked like when you went into a show.
Makes sense to me because what did they do in a contest? They look at you. All this other stuff that's doing, like measuring themselves, weighing themselves, percentage of body fat, that doesn't enter into it at all. So my idea was focus on what's important. You know, it's like I was a mathematics teacher and, you know, I knew what was involved. And so I realized, you know, when you have an equation for success, you don't put things in there that don't matter. put things in there that are important. That's what I did. And I studied the photos. I saw myself from every angle, and I realized that, you know, here's the thing. Nobody else knows what they look like. Mm-hmm. People only see themselves backwards because they're always looking in the mirror. But when you take photos,
that's a good point.
You see yourself the way you are, you know. And the thing is, when you have a photo and you flip it like you would when you, you know, you look in the mirror, you see your image flipped.
Uh-huh.
It looks very different.
Yeah, that's a good point. I never thought of that. You're seeing yourself backwards. Yeah. You're right. And it's kind of hard to do too, right, Frank, when you're getting ready for a show to look at yourself in a picture because, you know, you're not quite ready a month out or 2 months out from the contest. So it's kind of be hard to, yeah.
See, I realized I had that advantage because I knew about these things and I did them, whereas nobody else did.
Mm-hmm.
People get on stage and they're wondering what they look like because they don't have any kind of proof. So how can you be confident and project a winning image? Well, you don't have proof.
Right,
I had proof.
Right.
How do you know?
Yeah.
You got to act like the winner when you're up there.
Yeah.
Hard to act like the winner if you don't have proof. I had proof.
Did you always have that attitude, Frank, even like going back to the 60s, the shows you did in the 60s? Did you always have this attitude that you acted like a winner? Or did it take a while to develop that?
It evolved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I learned with competitions. I mean, I didn't know much when I first started out, and I learned along the way. The thing is, I'm a good observer, and I learn from things because, you know, I've trained in education, and it all developed. It all contributed to the final result.
So 72, you go over to the NABBA universe, and you win now the pro division after you lost to Bill Pearl the year before. And you were in really great condition for that one also, right? You said you were a little bit bigger for that.
Yeah, I was in really good shape. Then the next day, we went to Essen, Germany to compete my first Mr. Olympia.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't do very well in that at all. I mean, it was Arnold's contest in Essen, Germany. He didn't deserve it. Sergio should have won.
Sergio should have won that, yeah.
Oh, yeah, he was in great shape. Sergio mm-hmm. Ray looked pretty good, too. But Arnold was a month out. He was a month away. But, you know, they gave it to him because it was in Germany.
Yeah, and then you ended up in fourth place right behind Arnold was first,
I don't know
what Sergio was second.
It didn't matter at that point. I remember Franco Colombo was in it, too, and he was behind me. He said, next year I get him by the neck.
That's what he said. Right. Franco used to say that a lot. So that was your first Olympia then, the one in 72 in Germany.
Yeah.
In 73, you were traveling a lot, right? You were doing exhibitions.
Yeah, I did a lot of exhibitions that next year, so I didn't compete. Then 74 I did. And it was me and Franco. It was at Madison Square Garden. Me and Franco, and then Lou Ferrigno and Arnold.
Mm-hmm.
And Arnold stole the show for that. And I mean, I like Franco and everything, but, you know, he wasn't fair. He wasn't a fair competitor. He would do things to sabotage my pose. I remember he was up in the control booth and he took the needle off my record and scratched it when I was posing.
No way. Really? Really? You know, when was that?
What's that?
That's fact crazy.
Is that if you have to screw somebody over to win.
Right. Right. Oh my God. I never heard that story. What year was that? Was that in 74?
Might have been 76 because it was the same story in 76. I was in fantastic condition in 76.
Right. It was really close between the two. I remember.
Well, you know, I mean, it all depends on, you know, what you like.
Yeah.
And so he was in shape. He was in his best shape. And I was in great shape for that.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you know, they say, well, it was a half a point he won by. Come on.
Yeah.
I know how things work. And so the next year I was ready, but actually I think I was in better shape in 76. I was really defined. 77, I was bigger, but, you know, I had the total look. And so that's what I wanted the first time. And then the next year, 78, I was much more defined in 78 because I trained specifically for it. And then in 79, I had a better combination of everything, more size, more definition, more everything. And so that wasn't easy when it was me or Mike Mentzer. And Mike didn't have the experience. I knew I would beat him easily, even though he was ahead at prejudging. You know,
yeah.
Like 1 point ahead. And I thought, you know, it doesn't matter. I'm going to wipe him out on the pose. And I did.
Yeah.
I would hit a shot and he'd look over at me and hit the same pose. And I'd say, I thought, oh, that's perfect. It's called follow the leader. So I was just totally confident with that. And I won it easily.
When you were competing in the Olympia, the first few times that you did the Olympia and you were up against Arnold, did you think you had a chance to win or did you think the judges were just going to go for that massive size like Sergio and Arnold had?
I had hopes, but I had no idea, really. Mm-hmm. You know, and plus these guys were way bigger than me. And so, you know, I sort of realized that, you know, it's going to be a real challenge to do this. But, you know, I just wanted to have, the main thing is you have something to train for with competition. And you exceed yourself when you do that. And that's the whole point of it. You know, whatever the outcome is, it's going to be the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and everybody's going to have a different opinion on that anyway.
Yeah.
Always people come up to you and says, oh, you should have won, you know. And so, you know, you just, it's part of the process.
It seems like when you did the NABBA shows over in London, they really appreciated your type of physique. And I think they kind of rewarded that symmetrical aesthetic type of physique in NABBA, don't you think?
Especially the first year. You know, well, each year they did.
Mm-hmm.
Except 71, they're just so enamored with Bill, they just sort of forgot about me. Although I was in great shape. But, you know, 70 and 72, I was in really great shape for that show.
Mm-hmm.
They liked it.
Yeah. So then let's talk about 75, because that was the year they did Pumping Iron. And I read in the book that you said you were kind of upset with George Butler coming in with these cameras, and it was taking over the whole Gold's Gym. And it was obviously they were favoring Arnold. They really wanted Arnold to be the star of the show. So you left Gold's and you went over to Vince's gym, right, to train that summer?
Yeah, I trained at Vince's that summer.
And you got along with Vince, right? A lot of people thought Vince was kind of, you know, a lot of people didn't like his personality and stuff.
I liked Vince. I liked Vince a lot. You know, I admired him, and I liked his gym and liked training mm-hmm. there. But it was, you know, it was a long drive from Santa Monica over there. But I did it. You know, but basically, you didn't have much leg equipment. So, you know, your legs can't really good that good. You don't have a squat rack. But, you know, his mm-hmm. upper body stuff is great. And I like going there.
Yeah. Did you feel your training got a little distracted by going out there? Or do you think you should have stayed at Gold's in hindsight, looking back?
I don't know. You know, it was what it was. So how can I tell?
Yeah.
I think that maybe I would have had better legs if I would have stayed at Gold's because he had equipment. Vince didn't really have it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Because that was an off year for you, right, Frank? 75? You weren't really on your best.
Yeah, it was probably one of my worst years.
Yeah.
76, one of my best years.
And then you were part of that posing at the Whitney Museum to help advertise Pumping Iron, right, in the early 76.
Yeah, that was 76 in February. Me, Arnold, and Ed Corney mm-hmm. went back there. And that's how they made their money to make the movie.
Right.
Of course, I never knew anything what was going on or, you know, the money involved. I just love going back there and doing that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, these other guys would get paid.
Right,
I never thought of it.
But that was kind of a cool event because you did it at an art museum, and then there was a discussion afterwards, right? So they were looking at the body as a work of art, and they had all these art critics there. And I think you kind of defended bodybuilding because somebody wasn't one of the critics disparaging bodybuilding, saying how can a human body be considered an artistic expression?
Yeah, I said, are you nuts? I said, backstage, I saw a tire with spikes in it, and that's called art. And here we have magnificent creation of the human body in its ultimate form, and that's not art, you know.
Right. Right.
What are you smoking? You know. And so I think I scored some points on that. I remember Candace Bergen was there. She was just very young and a photographer.
Mm-hmm.
And she was there. I remember that.
Yeah, I remember seeing her in the footage of Pumping Iron. They had that extra footage from Pumping Iron, and they had that event in there. Yeah. But then that kind of motivated you, right, for 76? You wanted to come back, and even after your poor showing in 75, you wanted to come back in 76?
Yeah, I was embarrassed from 75.
Mm-hmm.
I really wasn't in shape for that.
Yeah.
In great shape in 76.
Yeah, and then they had it in Columbus. That was the first time Arnold and Jim Lorimer promoted it, and they did a fantastic job promoting it, right? Yeah.
Yeah, they did a good job. And so the three years I won, it was in Columbus, 76, 77, 79.
And I remember one of the things you said about when you lost to Franco, even though that was debatable, and like you said, it all depends on what type of body you like. But you said Franco was smiling a lot, and when you saw the pictures, you had sort of a stoic face, right? You were very serious.
Yeah, I was a bit too serious. You know, I sort of look at what I could have done better, and that's what it was. You know, it's not that deserve to win. It's just I see slightly bow-legged, no cuts in the thighs, great mm-hmm. torso. Not much in the way of arms, you know, short. Or, and so, you know, I think, you know, what it could have been, this could have been it too. Arnold asked me, I was teaching school at the time, he asked me to go back to New York City with him the week before the Olympia to do publicity. And I said, oh, Arnold, I'd love to do it, but I can't. I'd get fired from my teaching job. I'm just taking too much time off anyway. They're calling me the guest celebrity at the school, you know, so I really couldn't risk it. So I went back there with Franco, and he got all the publicity, and he was just right in line for it.
Yeah.
He was in good shape for Franco.
Mm-hmm. So 77, now this was interesting, because one of the things I always admired about you, Frank, and I got involved in bodybuilding right around 77, so that was the first year you won the Olympia, and I remember I would always read your articles in Muscle Builder magazine, and I always liked the approach that you took, how you were very mentally into the sport, more so than just about anybody else. Like, you would analyze your dreams, and you were very aware of your self-talk, and one of the things you did in 77 that I remember was you were advertising your mail order courses as 1977, the year of Zane. So you were kind of predicting from January of 77 that this was going to be your year. I thought that was really, really interesting.
I was, yeah.
And I remember the magazine publicity that year, a lot of it focused on Robbie and also I think Ferrigno, because Ferrigno was supposed to do it too before he got that Hulk thing. And you just kept your nose to the grindstone and kept training, and you just believed in your mind that you were going to win, right?
Yeah, you know, I saw Robbie's attitude. I mean, he had a great body, maybe more developed than me, but, I just saw his attitude. He really wasn't confident. I've been in touch with him, you know, last couple of days. He's doing some stuff, and he's a great guy. I really like him a lot.
Yeah, fantastic bodybuilder, and he still looks fantastic to this day, yeah.
Yeah, he's 71.
But let's talk about the affirmations, Frank. That was one of the things you did that no one else did, and you said – you wanted to repeat a million times, right, in 1977, that you were going to be Mr. Olympia.
I learned a Buddhist mantra, and it sounded very good to me, and I still say this a lot. Mm-hmm. I've been saying it since 1976. I say it a lot. That's how I meditate, is saying the mantra. And the thing about it is it crowds out negative thinking.
Right.
The thing is to have an open mind, but in order to get to there, you have to replace the negative thinking. If you just let your mind drift, I discover all kinds of things come up. You know, you worry about what's going to happen, just one thing after the other. But if you have a mantra, that replaces all of that and it uplifts you. And so that's how I meditate. Still do it.
So you did that, right, Frank? You repeated a million times that year that you were going to be Mr. Olympia
in
77?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. That's amazing.
I said my mantra a million
times. Yeah. 3,000 times a day or something?
Just about, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I had another one was, I have already won.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was just basically, that wasn't what I said the most. It was this Buddhist mantra.
Yeah.
They're very powerful because you think about it, they've been said billions of times by millions of people. And so that's a lot of power there. So if you can tap into that, you have a lot of power going for you.
Mm-hmm. Did you pay attention to any of the magazine publicity that was going on at that time? Because, like I said, a lot of it was focused on Robbie. Or did you were you kind of in your own world?
No, I contributed to the magazine. You know, I realized that everybody had their own thing to say. But, you know, the whole thing about it is, Rick Wayne asked me this one time. I remember we were on stage. There was a show in Philadelphia, and it was a couple weeks before the Olympia in 77. Ricky says to me, he says, Frank, what do you think your chances are in the Olympia contest? I said, Rick, my intention is to win. That's all I said. And that's what it was. That was my intention. And when you're sure about your intention, you keep putting it out there, things, magic happens. And it did.
Yeah. And I wanted to ask you about your dreams also, Frank, because you used to analyze your dreams. And the 3 years that you won the Olympia, you said every one of those years you had a dream that would kind of predict you would win the Olympia. So talk a little bit about that. Tell me about some of the dreams you had before those Olympias, and even some of the other ones that you had when you lost the Olympia.
Well, you know, the thing about it is your dream life is sort of runs parallel to your waking life. And the more focused and positive you are in your waking life, the more your dreams are like that. And so, you know, I had some symbolic dreams and everything. I remember I had one dream one time that I was driving with Franco in my car, and it was in Pennsylvania, and there was it's called Courtdale. It was right near where I lived. And there was a graveyard there, and Franco said, stop the car, and he got out of the car, and he walked into the graveyard. And that year was the year that Franco fell in the World's Strongest Man's competition, running with the refrigerator in his back, and screwed his knee up. That happened before that accident he had. And so I knew he was going to be out of it in some manner. You know, I just, the dreams... No, you dream a lot of things. You dream for the future. Because the thing about it is this. It's nothing magical about it. The thing is, there's things going on in your life all the time. It sort of goes around in a circle, but we don't pay much attention to it. You see, that's in your dream. That comes out in your dream life. Your dreams are basically a picture of your feelings, and a lot of times your feelings are things that go on during the day that you don't pay attention to. And so I really got involved in dream work back then. I'm not too involved in it now. I just sort of realized what I've dreamt about. Mm-hmm. I still have some pretty phenomenal dreams.
Didn't you have one about Ricky Wayne too? Because wasn't he making a comeback at the 76 Olympia? And you had one about him also, right? Because he got injured too.
I don't remember.
So after you won in 77 then, Frank, you decided right away you were going to do it again, right, in 78? Because you thought even though you won in 77, you thought you could have been a little bit better.
Yeah, I was all set to do it again in 78, and I was ready to quit in 78 just to retire after that. Mm-hmm. But I was hanging around with a lot of powerlifters at that time, Jan Todd, Terry Todd, mm-hmm. Doug Young. Mm-hmm. Sort of motivated me to compete again, and I did. And I went, I think it was like 13 weeks before the show, I really made my decision to enter again. And
at 79?
Yeah, I was in great shape in 79.
Yeah, I was at all three of your wins, and I thought 79, you were really phenomenal.
Yeah, I was about 8 or 9 pounds heavier.
Yeah.
Thicker, you know, just with even more definition. So it was a great year.
And I remember when you were doing the commentary for the Mr. Olympia after you retired, you were saying, I think you were talking about Lee Haney at the time, and you were saying how it's important that every year a Mr. Olympia winner not only repeats the win, but he makes improvements in his physique. And I think you did that, Frank. You definitely improved from 77 to 78, and then you also made great improvements from 78 to 79.
You know, I really didn't see any improvement in Haney. I thought it was great the year he won and deserved it in 1984. And then he just stayed the same the whole time. And then the last year he improved, I thought. First year and last year. And I was thinking, you know, there's a name for this. It's called the incumbency effect.
right.
You know, once you win, you can keep winning if you look. You know, and that was true for everybody but me, it seems. I thought George Yates really looked good. He's one of my favorite bodybuilders for one of the big guys. I thought he really had some great development.
Yeah, he did.
I thought he was better than Haney.
Okay, yeah. Well, you had a lot against you, Frank, didn't you? Because you weren't one of the big guys. So you really had to do everything perfect in order to win. You had to have your posing was perfect.
Yeah.
The way you stood. Even I remember your trunks were made perfectly, your tan, your mental attitude. Everything had to be right on point. But you were able to do it three times in a row, and you were able to be, because there was a lot of mass monsters back then. I mean, they weren't as big as they are today,
was,
of course.
It was more of a challenge. But, you know, the thing is, from 1976 to 1983, all the guys that won were under 200 pounds.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
You know, I mean, 79, I won it, and then 1980, Arnold won it. Shouldn't have, but he did. I think Arnold was the only one in the contest in 81, so he won it again. And then 82, I competed. I was bulky. Everybody said, you know, you got to get bigger. So I went in at 200 pounds, too bulky and smooth. I lost my lines. And Chris Dickerson won it. I mean, come on, Dickerson winning Olympia over me? Jeez, that was a slap in the face. In 83, I just went the opposite. I was extremely defined.
Uh-huh.
Lighter.
Yeah.
And I ended up, you know, I was thinking four, you know, I want to win four Olympias. And so I got fourth place. And so I said, there's my four. Because I look at omens a lot, you know, dreams and omens. Mm-hmm. So I figured, well, that's it. Time to go. I already had a torn rotator cuff. I said, this is it. Time to go. I'm already 41.
Yeah.
Bill Pearl was 41 when he retired too. So I said, this is enough.
Right.
I'm just going to focus on maybe working, you know, training people. And then we opened up Zane Haven, and I've been sort of doing that ever since, training people here.
Now, in 1980, when you got into that, when you had that injury, you were looking really good too, right? Right before that injury, right, Frank? Weren't you even bigger than you were in 79?
I was like over 200 pounds, and if that didn't happen, I would have been in a great shape of my life. But, you know, I basically shouldn't have gone in that year.
Yeah.
I was in the hospital, and I talked to Arnold, and I said, Arnold, what do you think I should do? I said, I understand that you're going in. He said, no, I'm just going to go over there and do commentary. I said, what do you think I should do? He says, well, you should go to Australia and defend your title. And so I did, you know, because I used to go to him for advice all the time when he wasn't competing.
Right.
And he'd tell me every little thing that needed to be improved. And so I sort of, you know, I relied on him. But, you know, he basically backstabbed me.
Mm-hmm.
Set me up, You know, and I guess he's just getting even, because in 1979, I'm walking off, you know, his Conan hair and his tuxedo, and he says, "Like, does it feel to win Mr. Olympia for the third time?" And I said, "Arnold, it feels even better than when I beat you for Mr. Universe." And it made it on, ABC. And it,
right.
And he was so pissed off, he called me on the phone and he's screaming at me.
Oh, really?
How could you talk against me? Blah. I said, "Arnold, you know, you have a great sense of humor when the joke's not on you. Just lighten up."
Right.
But that was it. That was it. He vowed to go and take me out, and he did the next year.
Well, so how did you feel that Arnold should have did in 1980? Because I've heard all kinds of stories about, you know, some people feel he should have won. A lot of people feel he should have won.
You know, whether or not I should have won, it's debatable. Because, you know, I had that accent. I wasn't at my best. I was life. I was very defined. But, you know, my face was like a death mask. Metzler looked good. I thought Boyer Cole looked really good. Arnold, geez, maybe fifth place.
Really?
I'd say maybe Boyer Cole, Metzler, me to win. Chris Dickerson next.
Yeah, I remember you made a good point. You were interviewed by a magazine back then, and you said when you only have 8 weeks to train, your strong points will come back, like his biceps came back, his chest. But, you know, the triceps were weak, the legs were weak, right.
But he had 8 out of 9 judges in his pocket.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It all depends on the judges. You know, if you look down and you see those judges, if they look like you or they resemble you or you know them and you're friends, guess what? Probably going to vote for you. And that's the thing. A judge only votes what he's familiar with. Basically, they're looking for themselves and other people.
Mm,
when they look at you, they're looking for themselves. And if they resemble you, you got it. And it doesn't bother me. I mean, it was just a great lesson.
Yeah. Now, do you wish you would have went in 81 when Franco won? Because that was back in Columbus.
I wish I would have done that.
Yeah.
I wish I would have bowed out in 80 and went in 81, because I would have wiped
it
out.
Yeah. And that would have been interesting, because that was kind of politically, it looked very politically motivated, you know. So
yeah,
I wonder.
He looked good. Flaps pretty good, you know, except the thighs are way too big for the rest of them. But Franco wasn't that good. He had a bitch tit and a gimp leg.
Yet
he won.
Yeah.
Sixth.
Yeah. I wonder what the judges would have done if you would have came in better than ever, better than 79. I mean,
they would have had to give it to me.
Yeah, they would have had to, right? So then you went back in 82, and that was the year you turned 40, right, in 1982, and you decided to go in a little bit bigger, right?
Yeah, I was too big, and I lost my lines.
Mm-hmm.
So I got second, you know. But,
yeah.
You know, losing Chris Dickerson, I mean, the guy, he's so cocky that year, I remember, too. Fuck you. You know, you're lucky. You're lucky to
really?
Win. Lucky Bill Pearl was there as your mentor, you know, and putting the bug in everybody's ear for you.
Mm-hmm. And then you did it one more year in 83. And now you had a bike accident, right? Didn't you fall off your bike that year?
And, and I had surgery after that. And I realized after that happened, I said, it's all over. You know, I'm going to hang it up.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought that if I would have kept going, I would have just torn my body up completely. And it was just not worth it.
Right. Well, by that point,
I saw the monsters on the horizon.
Yeah.
Because that year in 83, Lee Haney was third. He placed ahead of me. I said, uh-oh, the monsters are back.
Mm-hmm.
And they were. That was it. I remember Samir won it. Samir was in good shape. McAway won second. Didn't understand that at all. You know. And then Haney was third. You know, I said, oh, shit, here they come. I'm out. I'm gone.
Right. Yeah, I remember I read an interview with you not too long ago, and you said from 1976 to 1983, well, as you just mentioned, that period was when mass didn't rule bodybuilding and the judges were even rewarding symmetry. Yeah.
Yeah.
And when you look at how bodybuilding is judged today, Frank, do you think the judges are not paying enough attention to symmetry, to posing? I mean, it's way different now than it was when you were doing it.
To tell you the truth, I don't really follow it too much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that if somebody came along and they were really good and had everything, they could turn the trend. But I don't see that happening. I really don't. And I don't think anybody sticks with it long enough like I did to do that. I see some guys that maybe could have been that way, but they don't stick with it.
Yeah.
They don't devote their life to it like I did.
Yeah, well, when I look at the shows that you won in the late 70s, it just seemed like the judges were more aware of the aesthetic appeal of bodybuilding, and they were able to reward points for having great symmetry and for great posing ability and all the things that you had and some of the other guys had.
But, you know, it's really hard to stand next to a guy like Phil Heath and make an impression. Really is, because, no, I mean, they have so much muscle.
I know.
So much muscle. And, I mean, you know, they have a good look to them. Mm-hmm. It's just out of the question. It's gone way, way far in the other direction now. There's no hope for anybody. The best they could do is you get an award for, you know, what's it, under 210 or something. They have a class. They're never going to be recognized as anything. It's always going to be the big guys anymore. It's all over. It's all over.
Yeah, they can't turn it back now, right? Because it's gone too far.
I don't think so. I mean, I might be wrong. It would be nice if someone could come along and do that, but I don't see it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do it. I'm too old.
Right. But isn't it amazing how your physique is still recognized, even by the younger guys? The guys who are just coming into the sport, they don't know who you are. They weren't around when you were competing. And they still recognize how great your physique looked. Yeah.
I'm glad of that. I made my mark, and so I'm happy with that. It was the best I could do.
Yeah, when I look at your career, Frank, it's really amazing that you stuck to your guns. You created this physique that was aesthetic, that was built for your body. You didn't chase the mass like a lot of other guys try to do, especially today. And you really created your own physique, your own persona, and it's lasted the test of time. Now, it's been how many years since you last competed? And you're still recognized as one of the most aesthetic and one of the best bodybuilders ever because you stuck to those principles.
Tell you the truth, I had no choice. That's how I had to do it. Mm-hmm. Because of the type of physique I had. I mean, I'm small boned and I have wide shoulders, you know, small waist. And that's the way I had to do it.
Yeah.
If I was different, I might have done it a different way. But that's just really the structure I had and the metabolism I had. And, you know, that's basically what it involved. You know, I realized all this stuff. And fortunately, I was able to follow it and, you know, get good results.
Yeah, an interesting part of your book, the Zane Bodybuilding Manual, was the part in the beginning where you talk about symmetry and you say that a lot of bodybuilders or a lot of people in the bodybuilding world, they misuse the term symmetry because they regard it as more aesthetic and proportionate. But symmetry, as you said, is where the right and left sides of your body are totally equal. And you even have this picture in your book where you take one of your pictures and you duplicate the right and left side, and then you show your actual picture, and you show how you don't have perfect symmetry, but by posing differently, by raising one arm differently or tilting one of your legs out, you were asymmetrical, but then you appeared to be more symmetrical, right?
Yeah, it's a term that's misused. Basically, you should maybe call it bodybuilding symmetry if you're going to use symmetry, but it's not symmetry at all. It's more about proportion. Proportion is the correct word.
Yeah,
symmetry, there's bilateral symmetry, which is what people have. The left and the right side are relatively the same. There's radial symmetry, like a starfish. Looking from the center of that, it looks the same in all directions. Mm-hmm. But that's what symmetry is. There's other kinds of symmetry, too. I wrote a book called Symmetry. I really got into this. I don't know if it's perfect symmetry. Basically, one of the meanings for symmetry is there's somebody out there in the world that's your double.
Mm-hmm.
I forget what that. I don't know if it's perfect symmetry or something else, but that's one of the kinds of symmetry.
Okay.
So it's really a technical term. It made its own, you know, own usage. It's not symmetry at all. It's really, really proportional. If you want to call it, you just call it bodybuilding symmetry because we know what you mean. But it's not symmetry. It's not only proportional, it's equal development of the proportions.
Yeah.
You take all these different parts of your body, maximum development there, and it all blends together and has a, you know, a meaningful whole, so that in effect the whole is greater than the sum of its parts.
Mm-hmm.
Added magic when everything is developed and put together, it has to fit.
Do you think that's kind of lost in today's bodybuilding world, where the emphasis, everybody seems to be imitating everybody else?
Yeah, it's like assembly line bodies.
Yeah, exactly.
People gain mass so fast with the pharmaceuticals that there's no really real unique look to them because it happens so quickly. In 5 years, somebody has all this muscle. Years ago, I mean, it took a long time.
Yeah.
If you took your time, you could do it. But, you know, they don't do that anymore.
Yeah, and you're right. When they develop them that quickly, they're not developing their physique correctly because it's just they're piling on the mass so fast. So, Frank, what are you doing now? You're still doing the training. You're still, obviously, I think you consider yourself more of a teacher now, right? I mean, you're still educating everyone about bodybuilding. You've got all these books coming out. And are you still doing the one-on-one training like you used to?
Yeah, I still do that. It's called Zane Experience. I have my private gym here. People come here and stay nearby and come over for either one, two, or three days.
Yeah, that's one of the other things also I appreciated about your book was you really went into detail about your training programs that you used throughout your career. So you talked about how you trained when you started, and then when you were in your early 20s and you're kind of bulking up and putting on that mass, talked about how what kind of training routine you did with that. You list all the exercises and descriptions of all the exercises, and then you even went into it when you're getting ready for the Olympia and things like that, your training routine.
You know, I have another book out. It's called 91 Day Wonder Body. And it's three months of what to do every single day. And it starts out with a full body routine, and then it goes to a two-way split, and then it goes to the routine that I use most of the time. Most of my workouts were like pulling muscles day one, legs day two, pushing muscles day three.
Right.
I had other variations of that. I had one that was like torso day one, legs day two, arms day three. And so people go through all these different 18 different routines. And by that time they're done, they know which one that is best for them.
That's awesome.
I really like that book because I think it's a great service to people who want to train.
Now, how's your training now, Frank? I mean, I'm sure you're still training every week. I'm sure you've had to make concessions getting a little bit older. And do you take more recuperation days and maybe train every body part just once a week?
I generally train a two-way split routine. I train upper body one day and legs the next. I don't do that much legs because I walk a lot. Mm-hmm. So we walk dogs every morning for about an hour.
Okay.
So my legs are pretty, I don't really do that much leg work. I do some, though. I do leg presses, leg extension, leg curl, not much calf work. Mm-hmm. But I have a lot of machines in my gym. I do a lot of machine work.
Okay.
Much free weights. I do pull downs. I do pullover machine, tricep extension on the pullover machine.
Yeah.
I do curling machine, pec deck, leg extension, leg curl, hip machine, rear deltoid, like a Nautilus torso row. I have equipment made that are clones of some of the Nautilus machines.
Okay.
And I have really good equipment. I mean, it works a lot better than it looks. It's fantastic stuff.
How many days a week are you training now, Frank?
It depends. Usually about every fourth day I do something.
Okay, gotcha. And you're still eating good? Your diet is still good? Still staying lean?
I'm always on a pretty good diet.
Yeah.
Probably in the 160s. I just want to be leaner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all about just staying healthy now, right?
Yeah.
You think a lot of older people would benefit from doing weight training, even those that really haven't done weight training most of their life, because as you get older, you know, you lose that muscle naturally, so it would just be a way to keep...
It's the best thing for them.
Yeah.
It really is. Not only is stretching, is weight training and stretching between sets.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I do. After I do an exercise, I stretch the body part I'm working for 20 seconds.
Right, right.
And I think that if people did that, and you only have to do one set, you can just do one set of an exercise, you know, until you get a pump.
Mm-hmm.
Do that, then stretch. You can get through your workout in like 20 minutes. Easy.
Yeah. So your website, Frank, is frankzane.com, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. And that's, you have all your books on there, all your courses?
Yes, everything's on there. Manual, of course. Then I have 91 Day Wonder Body. Then I have 91 Day Wonder Abs, which is a progressive ab routine that you do more each time you do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have basically every year I come out, I used to publish a quarterly, Building the Body quarterly. But now I do it every year, and I have 2019 Building the Body, which is about 60 pages. And I sell those out, which will be soon. I have the 2020 to come in to replace that. Then I have 31 Day Wonder Posing, which is a complete course on posing, which is a workout in itself. You know, it tells you all about posing and the different sequences you can do. And many photos in there. And, you know, it's a workout just doing that. If somebody did that, all you need is a mirror. And you can get in great shape just doing the posing, because posing is a workout.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And that's a lost art today too, Frank, right?
Yeah, I know. People don't put enough time into it.
No. I was just at the Olympia last year, and I can't remember one routine. I mean, there wasn't one routine that was really done well to music or really, you know, it's choreographed well. No. Yeah, it's a shame.
Somebody most shot a double biceps, and then they walk to the center stage and do the lifting hands up to get more applause. Then they do the same thing, and
And it's such a shame, too, because they're really missing the boat now with the social media and the YouTube. Can you imagine if someone came out and did a great posing routine like yourself or like McAway or Labrada? I mean, that would be watched over and over and over again because, you know, I mean, I think it would be appreciated. And it, now they have a venue where they could show it on YouTube. And nobody's really taking advantage of that.
That right now, but I don't know why they're not doing it.
Well, Frank, I want to thank you for taking the time out of your schedule to appear on the show. We've been doing this show for like 2.5 years, and obviously you're an icon, and you're someone we've always wanted to talk to. I really appreciate you taking the time, and it was great to hear from you and hear about your career.
Well, great. Send me a link to it, okay? Email me a link.
Absolutely, I sure will.
Okay. All right.
All right,
it was great talking to you, and lots of success with your podcast.
All right. Thank you, Frank. I'll talk to you soon.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I really want to thank Frank Zane for agreeing to come on the show. I really, really appreciate it. And I'm sure the fans out there are going to really love Frank's interview. Next week, we may be joined by 7-time Miss Olympia, Corey Everson. So keep your fingers crossed for that. We're supposed to interview her this week. And in the meantime, I want to thank again Florida Alternative Medicine and Old School Labs. Thanks to all our Patreon donors. If you want to donate to the website and help incur some of these costs, I would really appreciate it. You can do a monthly Patreon payment going to the BodybuildingLegendsShow.com website. And in the upper right-hand corner, you will see the Patreon account. So that's it for the show. I hope everybody has a great week. We'll see you guys next week on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Take care, everybody.